Well, I have struggled to prepare and be coherent for this one. Maybe I chose a topic that's too broad, so I hope it comes out okay. I think I have an outline that'll work. What always helps is interaction from the congregation, even though this is the pulpit and standing up here in this elevated position. I would much rather be on the floor with our old pulpit, kind of at the same elevation, sitting amongst everybody. But the way the technology is working right now, this is where we stand. So I invite the interaction. I'll try to invite the interaction as we go today and try to repeat for those sitting in the fellowship hall. The other bit of technology is I'll be using my tablet to go back and forth. I hope that works well. If not, I've got my manual method here in case that fails for some reason. Mitch, Elder Mitch, and Pastor Fred have been teaching on some topics, Galatians, of course, that have been greatly helpful. And the thought was that maybe I would kind of fill the gap and kind of continue. I really don't want to try to step into those shoes. What I've actually done is chosen something that's more topical and a little bit more related to current events. But it's not out of lack of appreciation of what they've been teaching, and just I don't want to try to continue their thinking on that. The topic I've chosen is somewhat related to what's going on around us. It's not directly. I chose this topic probably a few weeks ago, and that is the idea of speech by us as evangelical Christians or as a church congregation as we live in our culture. We all know that we are a very connected culture these days because of things like Facebook, Twitter, email, texting. We have four or five different methods where we can all talk to one another, and we talk to one another very quickly these days. We say things, and we respond, and we react. So I'm kind of a recent Facebook joiner. I probably started using Facebook within the last year, and I've seen what others put out, some from this congregation, some from others, people that we know, some from places and people that I don't know but are related to friends, etc. So I get a sampling of how people are thinking and what people are saying, and some of it concerns me. And I'm really concerned not so much with what I see, but potentially what could be said if we get stimulated and start moving in the wrong direction. Well, this week and the last few weeks have been very tough for the city where I live, and the city most everybody here lives close to, and that's Baton Rouge, Louisiana. There have been things that have happened that have stimulated conversation. And when I go to work and talk to people, we talk back and forth. And I, as one who would represent the Lord where I am, have to be careful to not just do what other people are doing around me and how I talk. I have to restrain myself and speak in a way that would honor the Lord and be biblical. From some of the things I've seen coming from people who are Christians, I am a little bit concerned. And so I did want to touch on the topic and give us something to think about as we face all of these opportunities to speak quickly and broadly with all the technology that we have, so that as we speak, that we would be careful and remember what it is. So that being said, the topic is speech, or specifically Christian speech, out in our culture and amongst each other. Now, to start with a demonstration, somebody warned me as I stepped up here this morning that we have a visitor. I don't know how many people have noticed our visitor this morning. A few people looking up in the peak. How's he doing? I haven't looked up yet. He's still just hanging out? Okay, that's good. Is he down a bit? Okay. Good. All right, now then, as I have brought that topic to mind, some people in the congregation are starting to get their skin crawl a little bit, aren't they? Bothers them to be in this sanctuary to have a bat, possibly who could decide to fly at any moment and land anywhere in the congregation. You could land on a pew, you could land on somebody's shoulder. Okay. What am I doing when I do this? When I bring up a topic and start speaking, Has everybody noticed that the thoughts that they have as a result of my speech are involuntary? Speaking carries the ability to create in the minds of others thoughts that they wish they didn't have, thoughts that bother them, thoughts that they would not have had had you not spoken, had you not said it. And we have to understand and realize that speech is powerful. Our whole world has been put in place by the Lord with many mechanisms built. And some of these mechanisms are biological, and they're somehow connected to the spiritual. We have brains, we have the part of us that we call our heart. Somehow they're connected. And then we have the ability to speak. And all of these things are tied together so that I, as a person, as an individual, can create in the minds of one person, or if I amplify it with a microphone and have the right setting, I can create that same thought in the minds of many. Or maybe not the same thought, the thought will be a little bit different, the response will be a little bit different in the minds of many, just by speaking. And physically, what has happened? All I have done is pushed a little air through my vocal cords, created words with my tongue, with my mouth, and that creates a pressure wave between here and this microphone. And it goes through the equipment in that cabinet in the back. It's amplified, you're hearing it on the speakers. Pressure wave travels to your ears and goes into your mind. And then the thought is created, and it's instantaneous, and it's involuntary. Sometimes we'll hear each other say, "I'm just saying." There is really no such thing as just saying. It is one of the most powerful things that we do because God has created it as our unique ability among the creation to affect the minds and the hearts of others, and for Him to affect our minds through speaking to us. So speech is powerful. That's kind of my premise on here, and we'll go through it and back up some of these thoughts here. Find my glasses. So I had a few other ways I planned on doing that demonstration, but this was the more convenient way. I was actually going to call out a woman and say, "Do you realize that I could say to you, you have a bat crawling on your shoulder," and see how she reacts, but I didn't do that. So it was a little bit risky to do that. So. But let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to Genesis chapters 1 and 2, and let's look at the created order of things. Let's look at the idea of speech as it shows up in the created order. See particularly what verse I wanted to go through. Look at verse 126, and then it's going to be 128 and 215. See if I can remember those. Now, if you notice, in the creation up to this point, God is speaking His creation into existence. And isn't that interesting that God Himself creates through His speech? Let us, and I'm sure that Pastor Fred or Mitch or the elders could teach us what that "let us" form means in the original language. It seems to be some permissiveness in it, that there's power already there and God is releasing His permission. Let there be, let us make is also some of the language. Let's read a few of those. Verse 24, "And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and the beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good." And this is similar. "And God said, let us make man in our image." Now, isn't that similar in that there is begins with the "let us"? But this is the first time that He says, "in our image." This is the triune God making man in His image. after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female he created them, or created he them. And God blessed them, and said unto them, Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over everything that moveth upon the earth. So up until this point, as we move through the creation, he has commanded, let there be, let there be, let there be. And then he says, let us make man in our image. And what is the first thing he does with man? Is he commands man, be fruitful and multiply. And if you go to chapter 2, verse 15, we see another command. And the Lord God took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, Of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it. Thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. Here we have again a command. How is this command coming across? Is this written? Okay. In the beginning, God created man and then immediately began to speak to him. So what effect does that have in the man's mind since the man was created in God's image? Thoughts appear. An understanding of the commandment becomes in the mind, appears in the mind. God has created man to receive the word and to understand the word when it's given. All of that is built in, and all of it to a certain degree is involuntary. When we speak, it's the same mechanism that God used with man in the beginning and that God uses with us. He built that mechanism in place, the mechanism of speaking and receiving speech and understanding for the purpose of hearing him. That mechanism is in place, but just because it was put there by God for his purposes in commanding us in the beginning doesn't mean that it can't be corrupted. There's a double negative for you. The mechanism of speech, the mechanism of speaking and hearing and understanding can be used by Satan as well and be corrupted. A few chapters or a little bit later in the book, we have Satan speaking to the woman. Same thing happens. Words are spoken, thoughts are created in the mind. We have that power every time we speak to create thoughts in somebody else's mind. It's immediate and it's involuntary. And then there's a moral component that comes along with it, as we see with Adam and Eve. They received the word from Satan, and then they had a moral responsibility to reject that word and to deal with it. So let's keep in mind as we speak that we are doing that. We're not just saying. The words never go out into the air and disappear. They land and they create thoughts. They go into the ears, they get translated into whatever neurological signals are created. And they create thoughts, and they create memories, and they create emotions and everything. So from a creation standpoint, let's remember what speaking is and how important it is and how powerful it is. How many of you have pets you can talk to? Okay. What is your pet that you talk to?
Two dogs.
Two dogs, okay. How much do you think they understand?
They know a lot of tree-cutting words.
Mine understand plastic wrap when they hear it. You open up something in plastic wrap and they know that, or they're to come running. It's kind of the universal language. But, okay, so they know food, something related to food. Yeah. Can they talk back? Okay, I think we're all kind of here. I mean, you know, we've gone from believing that animals are completely stupid, to I think realizing there is some ability for animals to understand our language and to somehow communicate back to us. I think we'd probably say that there aren't any animals that we know of that actually use words, although there is a gorilla in one case that's been trained to have a vocabulary, and I don't want to begin to understand how that is and put that in the created order of things. That seems to be an anomaly, and I'll leave that where it is. But for the most part, I could say, actually, our ability to speak is unique. It's not something that we find among the animals. It is our ability. Parrots, you know, we have one parrot who doesn't speak, but there are some parrots, especially an African gray, that are amazing in what they can say and how clearly they can say it. Just amazing ability. But even there, even though they are apparently doing a good job mimicking, repeating what they hear in certain situations even, making those, you know, in context, it's different than what we do in how we process language and how we speak, how we create words and sentences, and we put structure together to impart that to somebody else and how it creates thoughts in them. It's a whole different level. But in case somebody wanted to try to put us on the same level from an evolutionary standpoint, I just want to make that statement that we are unique. There are going to be those in the science community who will continue to try to push the envelope on the idea of animal language among all the different types of animals that tend to be more intelligent. But I think we maintain that there's a fundamental difference, and it's part of our created order on there. So I just want to make sure we're clear on that. It's one of the problems here with technology as it goes to sleep. Let's see, there we go. One of the things that we can mention about language as we talk about it, as we speak, just to get back to the physics of it, what are the different parts of speech that end up imparting meaning? We have words, but if I ask a question like, well, if I say something like this, what does that imply? If I raise my tone at the end, what does that mean? It's a question. Okay. So tone or pitch is important. If I speak quickly, what does that mean? What does it mean about me if I speak to you quickly?
Trying to sell you something.
Trying to sell you something. It means I'm urgent for some reason. Maybe it means I'm angry. Maybe I'm impatient. Maybe I'm in pain. There's something else that we call tone. Speaking about, you know, Sandra talking about the dogs, I don't know about you, but my dog picks up on tone immediately. Walk into the room, her, our dog's name is Susie. Walk into the room and go, Susie. Immediately the ears drop down, the tail drops down, and she's looking for some place to hide because she's been eating the cat food or something like that. Tone is a part of our language. So it's not just the words we use, it's how we use our words. What else about language? What else can we think is a feature of our speech? Body language, there we go. Using your hands, standing forward, getting bowed up. What other body language are you thinking about? That's a good one. Stepping back, crossing the arms, that's right. Tapping the foot, impatience, anger. Volume's another one, exactly. If I speak quietly, what does that mean? That I'm shy, that I'm unsure. If I sound like a furniture commercial, I'll pick on furniture sellers, always screaming. They turn the volume down on the mic and let the person scream. It creates a sense of urgency. You could set the gain on the mic and just have them speak normally and we could hear just as well, but no, they actually scream in some of the commercials. There are some of the radio talk show hosts who do that as a habit. They are somewhere between normal speech and almost a scream as they talk. It conveys a sense of urgency. That's right. So we have to think about that as we speak. What do I convey with my tone, my pitch, my volume, my speed, my cadence? What is it that I am conveying as I speak? We all know this intuitively when somebody speaks to us, but sometimes we might not be conscious of what we're doing as we speak. So we have to be careful on that. That's good. Those are all ones I thought of, plus a few I have not thought of on there. That's right. So, again, my objective here is for us to look at some of the passages in Scripture that talk to us about speech, and for us to contemplate, as we would leave this lesson, how can I be careful? How can I be more careful than I have been? Now, we touched on the subject briefly about writing. When I say speech, it very nearly includes what we write. But writing is a different media. How is writing different? What can we think of in one way about writing? Right. That's excellent. That's exactly right. There's the two things that you've mentioned, Will, on this is that there's context. We'll cover a few things here. When we speak, there's a context. It's after something else has happened. It's in a situation. What you say in a situation will be received somewhat based on that situation. The situation affects how what you say is going to be received. So you must be careful and consider how will this be received based on what's going on around me. If the building is burning down around you, it's not time to have a light personal conversation. It's time to be urgent and to be quick. And a light personal conversation will probably be rejected with what are you doing? We have to put out this fire. So those kinds of things. The other thing that's very important, well, I wanted to mention the idea of writing. We have the option when we write of hitting what button? Delete. If we sit back, look at it, fold our arms and say, how is this going to be received? Nah, I'm just not going to send it. And I have done that a number of times. The problem is we learn how to hit the delete button after we've made some mistakes in how we send our emails. We've sent a few emails or a few letters, and it was wrongly received. It's not the way we intended. They saw in us a hostile tone that we didn't intend. And so we began to learn, if I send this in the context, in the situation, it's not going to go well. I need to go talk face to face so that my tone can be imparted correctly, exactly what you're talking about. And the other thing I think Will brought out is that there's something uniquely wonderful about speech, especially when we can do it eye to eye, face to face, because we have this whole immediate mix of body language and tone and seeing somebody's eyes. All of this comes together to create a transfer of intent that just gets messed up many times when we do it in the abbreviated forms of speech, through writing, through talking on the phone, and other ways. So I agree, it's preferable sometimes, if there's a misunderstanding that's starting to develop, get face to face with each other and talk and go through things. There's also the likelihood that people are less likely to become angry if they're face to face with you, because now it's personal, it's not distant. So a lot of these things, exactly what you're bringing up, you know, we find to be true. Frank, did you have something? Or? Okay. And the first part of what you said was? Yeah. That's exactly right. Speech is non-reversible. Speech leaves a thought which gets stored in memory forever. For adults, exactly. Children would ask for something to be taken back. Adults many times realize it can't be. The deal is done. Exactly right. So remember that speech, the other feature of speech is that it's non-reversible. So there's a lot to this, and this is why I struggle with this topic. The more you talk about speech, and of course there's people who major in communications, and this is why. It's a very complicated area. But there is some instruction for us, and let's move on to it. Let's go to James chapter 3. Now, this is a predictable passage to go to. It concentrates on the idea of speech. There are even some other places in James where he begins with a theme, talking to elders and others to be careful with speech. But the whole chapter 3 deals with speech pretty much. So let's go ahead and start at the beginning of this chapter. Now, of course, James is writing to the 12 tribes, is how he addresses in the beginning of the what we think is an epistle to the 12 tribes. There is, at least to my knowledge, somebody can chip in here if they want. There is not a specific problem in a specific church that we know that it's being dealt with here. This seems to be more a generalized letter to early Christians, probably one of the earlier letters that there is among all the epistles. So this seems to be general instructions to early Christians. And also, it seems to address the unbelievers in some of the language in this chapter as well, unbelievers who might be in the hearing of it. So beginning in James chapter 3, verse 1. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man. Notice how he's going straight to the idea of speech here. And able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us. And we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity, so is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of all things in the sea, is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and wherewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, bear olive berries, either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. And then he finishes up this section with, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom, meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So from verses 13 to the end of that chapter, we don't see the topic of words being addressed, but you can see how language works in all of that. Let a man work in conversation, show out of a good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom. There will be language involved in all of his conversation. And conversation is an older usage there, which would mean all of your works, all of your conduct as you progress through the world. But certainly a big component of how you progress through the world is your actual speech, your actual conversation itself. And then he goes to, but if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, we all know what strife looks like. It's not members of a congregation or members of a community meeting in the street and grabbing each other's throats and rolling around on the ground to physically defeat one another. Strife is verbal, mostly. Strife is insults against one another. What we saw this week at the RNC was strife. One group striving against another to gain supremacy through their words. So all of this is dealing with language. Let's go back and look at some of the particular things that James teaches us in here. He uses some analogies. Let's go through them. What's the first analogy here? The first physical object that he compares to a tongue? Okay, the bit that goes in a horse's mouth. What does a bit do? Somebody who knows horses better. Okay, right. It actually inflicts a little pain on the horse, doesn't it? Okay, now there's the word, Paul used the word control, and that's the word I want to get to on here. Part of our modern world, especially where I do my work as an engineer, has a lot to do with the idea of control. We have large machines in our world, and they had large machines in theirs. For them, a horse was a large machine. It was a large work object, large work animal. A lot of energy in a horse. If you don't have a bit in a horse's mouth, how do you keep him from stepping on your foot? Or how do you make him go where you want rather than dragging you under a tree branch to knock you off? You don't. A horse goes where he wants to go without the bit being in his mouth to inflict a little bit of pain that allows you to communicate your intent to him. I want you to do this. I pull a little bit left, pull a little bit right. This is what I want you to do. And it inflicts enough pain on him that it actually brings him into subjection and control. A bit is a small thing, but it helps us direct a large amount of energy that we know to be a horse. We know a lot of the destruction a horse can do. A horse can kill you in a moment if he wants to. And I've dealt with Mr. Paul's horses. Thankfully, they're fairly tame. But that's one analogy. What's another one that he uses, the next analogy? Okay, we have a ship's rudder. How many have experience in a sailboat? Okay, a few. It's amazing. You're out on the water. You get wind filling the sails, to the point that your boat heels over a little bit, and then the amount of speed that you gain and direction you take is all controlled by a small piece of wood, maybe this size. With a little bit of input, a little bit of direction, you change the course of how the energy of the wind is being applied to the sail and your direction. It's amazing how it works. It's another example, large machine, large amounts of energy, small amount of input. The tongue is like that. We have a large amount of energy that's stored up in people, and they can be moved and directed by our speech, by our word. Okay. Now, I see I'm running out of time, so I have to pick and choose how we go through this. So you can look through some of those analogies in there. But let's finish the last one, and let's talk about, we'll go ahead and finish this last one and try to speak about it, because it's really the concern he has. The last analogy is fire. Okay, how does a fire work? Let's put one in a forest. We start a fire in the forest with what, if we wanted to? Okay, we got David here. We have to let him with a spark. Okay, exactly. Starting a campfire, we start off by creating a spark somehow using flint. Or if we do it the modern way, we strike a match, drop the match in the straw. That progresses to a tree. What happens when fire gets to that tree? The energy that's in that tree is released. And it's released in a destructive way. It expands, it climbs up the tree, and then it travels to the next trees around it. So not only do you get a release, a destructive release of energy, you get a destructive release that starts propagating itself to the next tree. Well, those two or three trees around that tree have energy in them too. And then they go up. We can, with our words, start fires. Now, the fire that I believe James is addressing here is something that would be a lie, much like what Satan did in the garden. The fire that can be started is when we impart something that is not true to the minds of others, such that it inflames them and they propagate it to others in a multiplying way. One person tells two other people the same lie. They become inflamed. And the energy is provided by the recipient. That's why the fire doesn't go out until everybody who receives it is affected. In a forest fire, they're all destroyed. But if we were to, if we say something that's not true in social media, and I've had this happen at work this week, I've had people say things like, "Do you know that waitress at that restaurant did this to that policeman?" I don't know if that's true. I'm not going to repeat it. You know, of course, I've done it here as an example. I'm risking doing that because I've planted the idea in your mind. But things like that can be said within a church or within a community that plant the idea, cause the energy to the people to become excited, and they tell other people, and it does damage as it propagates all the way through. And it's devastating to a congregation, it's devastating to a community of people who already don't understand each other and don't have the common faith, common reason to forgive one another in Christ. So we have to be very careful with what we say. We have to be very careful not to propagate a lie. The principle in the Bible is everything shall be established by what? Two or three witnesses. We don't want to take the witness of one and propagate a lie unintended and cause our community or our church to be engulfed in the flames of hatred or of mistrust against one another. We have to be very careful that what we receive from somebody, that we put it out there, if it hasn't been corroborated, and if there's no reason, if there is not a reason for us to move it further, to move it on. Let things like that die with us, like Adam and Eve should have in the garden. When Satan propagated the idea to them that God was not being fair, that he was holding back on them, it should have died with Eve in her mind. That thought should have gone no further. She should not have even told Adam and tempted him. But they both heard the voice of Satan through propagation. And we live in the fallen world as a result of that. It is how Satan works. And so we have to be very careful as our congregation to not be part of it, to be different in the world, to be the ones who tamp it down and don't propagate it at work and other places. And it's especially true right now in the context that we're in. So with that, it looks like I'm right about on time. Does anybody have anything else they want to add to that? I really appreciate the feedback this morning. I had quite a few other verses I could go to. Matthew chapter 5, Sermon on the Mount. David? Right. And we are there as the salt of the earth. We are there to act as a preservative so that the world does not move itself into all the destruction that it seeks. We are there to help stop that as much as we can, to be a godly witness. So I hope this lesson has kind of put some of these things in mind. I know just doing the study for myself will make me more careful as I go through social media and talk with people at work. So I hope it also helps you. So let's go ahead and pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for the way you have made things. You have made us able to hear from you and to speak and to be kind and to communicate your love to others. So Father, help us to do so as we go through our week, to not be part of this self-destruction that's going on in the world now, that is propagating as a fire from one person to another. Help us, Father, to be those that would bring peace, as you taught in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the peacemakers. Father, help us to be ready to teach your word and to explain the hope that is within us to all that would ask of us. We do pray these things in Christ's name.